You are listening to the Alouettes Flight Deck, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Although I will say, just the idea of Andre Preux or Al Bradbury having to say illegal touching. Say it with a straight face. I don't think they could. I wouldn't be able to.
All right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff.
Welcome to Alouettes Flight Deck, the podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Kepper, along with Cliffy D. Welcome, sir. How are you?
Oh, man. Football is back 100%, and I am loving it.
Yes. It was really weird seeing a preseason game so early in preseason. The other day, it didn't include the Alouettes, but still it was CFL football. This isn't a regular podcast, Cliff. We have actually two things to celebrate. First being our 50th episode.
Ooh, 50.
50. Ooh. Usually
when we came out, they said we wouldn't even last 5 episodes. So there.
That was you. No.
Hey, no expectations, no disappointments. Being an Alouettes supporter, that's kind of the mindset you have to go in. So I kind of took that same approach to the podcast. Is, you know what? No expectations, no disappointments. And look what we've achieved so far.
Exactly.
How cool is that?
Exactly. But when it comes to podcasts, when is it when you reach the peak? I mean, you know, when you say when you're 50, you're about to go into the latter part of your life. What number is that for podcasts? Or it doesn't really account, eh? I don't think so.
Well, what, just as long as you up to like a few hundred, right?
Yeah, just as long as you stay consistent and you get better, right? It's like life. Just stay young at heart, right? That's all you got to do. Just stay football at heart. That makes no sense. The second thing that we want to announce, if you don't already know, because we put it out on our social media accounts already, you can now find our podcast a lot easier. No more worrying about Alouettes Flight Deck at podbean.com. If you now head over to alouettesflightdeck.ca, you'll be able to get all of our Flight Deck podcasts that much easier.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you can still go onto iTunes and Google Play Music by searching the keywords Alouettes Flight Deck, and you'll still find the podcast that way. And we definitely still encourage you to download it through that medium. But yeah, one-stop shop for everything. AlouettesFlightDeck.ca.
2 years in the making and a discount code. That sure helps. Number 50, we have quite a few things to talk about. A lot of it has to do with camp, but we also were able to speak with the CFL head statistician, Steve Daniel, talking to us this week about an initiative that he and his crew over at the stats information department are going to be doing for the 2018 season and beyond. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Okay, Cliff. Well, for the first time in a long time, first time ever for me, I went to camp for 2 straight days. I'm such a bad Owls fan. You've been to many, many a day at camp. But we got a lot to talk about, man. Camp, first of all, wow. That's really, because everything that we're talking about really encompasses what has happened at camp, and you know, all leading up to this Thursday where we have our first preseason game, and luckily it's televised. It's the only one that's televised. I'm correcting myself. The home game is televised on RDS.
Yes.
So let's talk about the first day at camp. It started off. You know, the weather was perfect. Started pretty garbage, but we ended up getting better. Perfect day, sunny day, day that we should have worn sunscreen.
Yes. Sitting on aluminum benches, which
does reflect. Oh, geez, did not like it, Percival Molson, at all.
No, not at all. At least at Percival Molson, the concrete will absorb some of that sun, but over at Olympic Stadium, I should say not at Olympic Stadium,
no.
Because you're not inside. There's actually a football field in between Stade Saputo, where the Montreal Impact play, and Olympic Stadium, where technically they have training, or that's where they have their practice field. It's right in that the small field in between. That's where the Alouettes are essentially doing camp when the weather is nice. So that's where they were practicing, and they do have benches so fans can come out and support the team and watch practice. But unfortunately, all aluminum, which combine that with the sun beating down on you, yeah, you tend to get a little crispy.
I was crispy. I was like, how the hell did I get sun right there? I had enough on that, and, you know, I had long pants on that day because I wasn't sure what the weather was going to be like. And it was an interesting day. What were your first impressions when it came to camp at in Montreal at the Big O?
That's the thing. I was very curious to see just what kind of a turnout were the Alouettes going to get, because, again, for the first time in ages, really, training camp is actually being held in the city of Montreal instead of going out to Sherbrooke or other places for camp. Fans can now actually go and attend Alouettes training camp sessions in Montreal, which I've said is terrific. I mean, they've got this small field over the Olympic Park, we should call it.
Yeah, it's right next to the planetarium. If anybody doesn't know where it is, it's literally right next to the planetarium, the new planetarium, the Rio Tinto Alcan Planetarium.
Yeah, and he's also had a couple of sessions at Percival Molson Stadium as well, which is also fantastic because, this is where these players, the players that make this team, that's where they're going to be spending a lot of their time. So it makes sense to do a couple of sessions there. So I think that's fantastic as well. And again, the fact that it's open to the public, this is the time. Like, I was really curious to see just who all was going to show up. As far as, you got your diehard fans that are going to follow this team no matter what, no matter where. But I was curious to see how many casual folks were going to come and check things out. And I was pleasantly surprised. I think I couldn't quite do a head count, but I'd say safely well over there's definitely over 100 people easily at camp. I know people out in Saskatchewan are having a laugh because that's a poor day of practice for them. And that's fine. But again, considering this is a new territory for the Alouettes to have their practice in Montreal itself, to have their training camp in Montreal itself, I still think is a great initiative and one I'm definitely looking forward to. And I just hope that in time, as fans get to learn and relearn, in a sense, where camp's going to be, the fact that they can actually go and attend this live, I just think it will be a good thing eventually that fans take part of this, make this their own thing. And it gets the players excited too, like, because they're excited to see so many fans out there as well. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a win-win. So I was very pleasantly surprised with the turnout on day one. And like I said, I'm just hoping that in time, over the next couple of years, if they keep practices and training camps in Montreal, whether it's at Olympic Stadium or even if you do a few sessions also at Percival Molson Stadium, I really hope that fans realize just how interesting it is and they take advantage of it.
It's different. And I, the way I was going into it, Cliff, is I was basing everything off of the scrimmage game that they had over in St. Hubert a couple of years ago. And then I used it based on my experience of that one time that I went out to Bishop's. I wasn't sure what to expect. I think I was expecting a little bit more people, being that it was downtown. Being in Montreal. But I mean, considering the people that were there, they were knowledgeable. As you said, they were diehards. We applaud everybody who came out. And it's different. Yes, it's not a game. But it's very different. I mean, if anybody saw the tweet that I put out of us watching the session over at Percival Molson, you know, we were centered on specific things, and that's what we'll talk about a little bit more too. But is there anything from day one that really stood out to you? Because I know for me, nothing meant more than being able to talk to an Alouettes legend in Peter Dellariva, just sitting there and, listening to him talk about the old days with the Owls and being able to talk about how it was then versus now and what he used to do and running plays and creating plays. And it's, these old timers from the Owls, and I guess all football. It's just so many great stories, and it's one thing that we hope to have. If we're able to pull this off and hopefully have Mr. De La Riva on the show for one episode, just to hear him talk and tell his stories, will be such an experience. But I mean, just that alone, seeing him standing there with his Hall of Fame ring, I mean, you're talking to a Hall of Famer. And it was just, to me, as I said, that's really the one thing that stood out to me the most from day one, besides having camp there at on the island of Montreal.
You're there for a training camp session. You're there to watch actual football being played. That's definitely important. But to be able to have legends come out to events like this, yeah, and it really helps hammer home the point of just how important it is to be a part of this team, to take in the whole football experience, and to be able to sit and talk shop with a CFL legend, an Alouettes legend at training camp. I mean, that's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I don't know if other teams do that, and if they don't, I would highly encourage them to consider that, because let's face it, the younger kids may not quite appreciate what a Peter De La Riva is or what he's done, but you talk about older fans that remember the glory days of the Alouettes, and that must have been a treat for those folks as well, to be able to sit down and, like I said, just chat about that great game that he played, or the Grey Cup victories, mm-hmm, or any number of things.
Him taking place in the Ice Bowl. I mean, the staple game. So, I mean, yeah, I agree.
And you try to explain that to someone like a millennial or someone who is a recent fan of the Alouettes, and they just may not quite fathom just how huge that was at the time. So, yeah, I think these, to be able to have more of these legends come out for events like this, to really help people understand just how much of an event training camp is, I love it. I'm really happy that the Alouettes reached out to Mr. De La Riva, and I hope that they continue to make efforts like this to try to bridge the gap between today's fan and the fans of yesteryear with legends like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, yeah, being, I mean, for he's a very young 70, I think 71, and it's, you know, he's able to tell the stories, Cliff, as if it were yesterday. I mean, it's just so clear what he's able to remember. So again, we're going to try our damnedest to try to get him on a conversation here with us, and just be able to talk to him about the old days and about the CFL and being, you know, being a player. So, besides our encounter with Mr. De La Riva, what else stood out to you the most from that day? I mean, you know, yes, it was day one. We got to talk with you know, a few of the guys who we've talked before on the podcast. We got to speak with Matt Schilt. We got to speak with BJ Cunningham to see how they were doing. We got to speak with we haven't had him on the pod yet. We're still making that sandwich for Terrell Sutton. I know you've been to a few more sessions since then, but did anything else stand out to you? I mean, maybe how the camp was being run, because remember, this is the first time that we'd seen it being run by Coach Sherman.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, what I was really taking an interest in is just how would he be running the camp, or would it be deferring a lot to his coordinators, which I think we saw a good mix of the two. Like, he mm-hmm. did let Kahari Jones take care of the offense. He let Rich Stubler take care of the defense, and the position coaches were doing their thing, as one would expect. But he was also very interactive with the players as well. I'd see him take people aside and sort of go over things a little bit, and just that general interaction to really get to know your boss, so to speak, which mm-hmm. I thought was great. And it's just one of those things that makes it a little more personable. And I'm sure for players coming in, especially rookies that don't know quite what to make of a whole CFL training camp experience, like, this is their first taste of it. And in a sense, it's Sherman's first taste of it too. So he's been through training camps in the NFL. Now, what's it like in the CFL? So it's kind of a learning curve for everybody, I would imagine. So I think overall, though, his interaction and how he ran things versus how much he deferred to his coordinators, I think it made for a nice balance, and I think that really helped the energy level at camp as well. I think it made it an enjoyable experience, about as enjoyable as one could imagine. When you think about it, at the end of the day, this is very much a job audition, mm-hmm. a job interview. So I think what he did was kind of put players at ease a little bit, made it clear that, you know, they're there to work, but it wasn't like a drill, a boot camp or anything like that. It wasn't anything of that nature. But I definitely think that Sherman did a great job in finding that balance between the two. And it definitely showed. And I think fans were pretty engaged with it as well. So I think the rest of camp, if every day was like that, then I don't think training camp would be such a grind.
I think one of the few things that I noticed that was different from when I went to camp prior, though, was the use of the bullhorn by Coach Sherman. We saw more of that day two at Percival Molson when it came to doing the drills and how they were setting things up, you know, certain times that they didn't spend spend more time on one thing more than the other. It was a mixture of everything else. That's one of the few things that I did notice that was different being under Cavis Reed or a few years ago when I think it was Jim Pop when I went the last time. So each coach seems to have their own thing and how to do it. And, you know, that Coach Sherman, that's how Coach Sherman's been doing it for years. You know, I'm sure it's the same way they did in the NFL, when he was a head coach there. So I think it broke things up enough that the players weren't lax at all about it. You know, they didn't get bored. They didn't, I would hope if you're there trying to, you know, you're applying for a job that you're not going to get bored, but I think you know what I mean, Cliff. I mean, it was a matter of there was always something different going on, no matter, depending on which team you were assigned to. Cause I think there were four total teams, two offense, two defense, I think. And then there's one for special teams by itself. But, that's one of the few things that stood out to me. Now you go to the second day of camp, and that was over at Percival Molson. And that was very different because, you know, after day one, we were able there and just to talk and to talk to many of the players that we knew. And, you know, for how long were we on the field for after it ended? Anywhere from 25 to 45 minutes, maybe? Is that a good assessment?
Oh, absolutely. Like, just even though like there's no locker facilities available right there, like players still managed to, you know, sit and talk with us as long as we needed, and it was very accessible. There was never any sort of rush to sort of, you know, for them to kind of just go about their business. Like, they actually were more than willing to sit and talk with us about whatever for any great length of time. So, I mean, that's me. Just outstanding. I love the fact that the Alouettes themselves kind of realize that, you know, it's very important to give everybody attention because you never know who you're dealing with. I mean, like, we're not in media in the traditional sense, but no. At the same time, people know that these guys know that we do the podcast. They know the blog is out there. So, I mean, like, it's still engaging and get the message out there. And that's what these guys are doing with their play. And they want people to know that they're there to impress. They're there to win a job on this football team. So, and we're talking about them. So they know. So it's, as far as I'm concerned, like, I'm so glad that these players realize the importance of what we do and are willing to make time for us, which is truly, truly outstanding. So once again, my hat's off to these players and to the organization as well for giving us the opportunity to be able to do this kind of thing. So it just makes for a really outstanding experience as far as I'm concerned.
And then on day two, we're talking about the differences is that, yes, because they're at a different location, because the locker rooms were not open at Percival Molson to the players. They, you know, it wasn't a normal day. It wasn't day one. It was down to business. You know, if you were there and you wanted to get an autograph, you could as they were leaving the field and stuff like that. But it was just a matter of, that was really day, I think for us, really day one of really concentrating on the team itself. And then that's, I think it's one of the days that I was, you know, my second day in a row for both of us. It was just a matter of we were concentrating on one specific thing. And it's one thing I asked you about when we were there sitting in the stands, and it was like, well, what are you looking at the most, Cliff? And we both said we were looking at the offense. That's one of the few things in the quarterback situation, because, you know, going in, the Owls had what, five, six quarterbacks on the roster. And, you know, with Josh Freeman being there and et cetera, and Drew Willey and Matt Schultz, just depending on who did we feel that was doing the best. And I think what's funny, and we'll talk about this a little bit more coming up, is that we both agreed that Josh Freeman did not look that sharp at all, did he?
No, I likened it to just rust, like looked rusty. And I couldn't help but wonder, and I still do right now, wonder, did he do any sort of off-season training at all? Because I understand that training camp, the whole point of training camp is to get yourself ready for the upcoming season. But a lot of these guys, you see their workout videos on Instagram, you see them on Twitter, you talk about, hey, let's go get this work in, all that stuff. Like, you tell a lot of these guys prepare. Like, football is a 365-day-a-year job nowadays. I never got the impression, again, I just based on what I've seen out of Freeman, I never felt like he was taking things seriously. I don't know. I mean, I think part of him kind of wanted to see if he could still do it, see if he could still be a quarterback. But just as the day one and day two progressed, he just kept falling further and further down. And I was just like, yeah, he made a couple nice throws here and there. But other than that, he was looking, and I say this generously, average.
No, he was the only quarterback, as far as I know, on that day that we were there, that he got picked twice.
Yeah, and again, it's great for the defense. I mean, the defense is there to do their job as well. But from what I saw of the Freeman's throws and just the way he read defenses, or quite frankly, didn't read defenses, I was kind of worried. Like, I don't think he's into this. I don't think he's. I think he's kind of in over his head a little bit, quite frankly. So, and as a result, this past Saturday, Josh Freeman had announced that he was retiring from football. And depending on who you ask, either the Alouettes released him before he could make that retirement announcement, or he just retired, whoever you want to believe. At the end of the day, I think Josh Freeman realized that, yeah, it's not going to happen. And hey, you know what? Kudos to him for coming up and giving it a shot. He definitely had the deck stacked against him as far as the world of public opinion goes, because people just didn't want to believe that he was going to amount to anything. And sadly enough, they were right. Like, this just sort of reinforces that narrative that NFL players can't just come up here and expect to dominate. Or when fans say, oh, you should go to the CFL and, you know, you'll tear up the league. And, well, no, it doesn't quite work out that way.
No,
just because you're a former NFL first round draft pick, that doesn't mean jack squat up here. At the end of the day, you've got to still put in the work. You still got to play the game, so to speak. And I think Freeman just realized that, you know what, I don't got this anymore. So hey, nothing ventured, nothing gained. It didn't cost the Alouettes anything other than flying him up here. Really, we found out. Via our good friend Joey Alfieri of TSN 690, that Freeman signed what was essentially a basic contract, mm-hmm. with a $65,000 base salary and zero signing bonus. So unlike the Winnipeg Blue Bombers signing Darian Durant and having to essentially pay $70,000 for his autograph, all it was when it came to Josh Freeman was nothing ventured, nothing gained. You brought him up here. Hey, if it worked out, that's awesome. If it didn't work out, well, no harm, no foul. And now this gives a chance for the other quarterbacks who have been doing pretty well, all things considered. It gives them more of a chance to shine. It gives the coaches a chance to really see what we have as far as the quarterbacking position goes. And so on and so forth. On to the next, as they say.
Yeah. And you, I said, you look at the thing at Josh Freeman and it's like, you know, we didn't really lose anything. It just makes me wonder how he would have changed from what Kavis said earlier, because he said he looked good in the mini camp that they had down in Florida till now. So it makes me wonder. But you know, we're able to move on and we can, you know, get who's going to be anointed the starter. It'll be interesting to see what happens on Thursday when it comes to the first game versus the Alouettes, versus the Red Blacks. But there's a couple other things that we wanted to talk about too. About what was your impressions from the other 2 days, the other couple of days that you spent at camp? Because I know you spent, that was so far, that was the only 2 days that I've been at camp. But you've been there. I think you were there this past weekend also. What else did you see besides the addition of Chip Cox showing up on the field, which I know we wanted to talk about also?
Yeah, because Chip wasn't there until late last weekend. still had, as of yesterday, hadn't taken the field. So I really don't know what to make of it, quite frankly, because it almost seems like Chip Cox himself didn't seem too sure whether he still wants to play or not. And the fact that as of Sunday, he wasn't dressed to actually be out on the field. So whether it is he just didn't fit, if he failed his physical or if he's injured or just not completely signed yet, again, without knowing all the details and everything, it's a little hard to say. But I mean, it's so hard because I know everybody wants to believe so hard in Chip Cox again, but the past couple of years has not been too kind to Chip, and I sincerely hope if he's here, it tells me he wants to still be a part of this team, and that's great. I just hope he realizes that there are still a lot of really talented linebackers on this team, and if he can't keep up with them, I sincerely hope that he realizes that and doesn't get in anybody's way. If he doesn't, I don't want him stealing a roster spot from a talented younger player, because I'm sorry, but Chip is not a young man anymore. And if he still thinks he can go, if he can still reach that level and be the Chip Cox that we all remember from 2009-2010, I'm all for that. But if not, then like Freeman, it's not a bad thing to admit that you don't have it anymore. And if you don't have it, then please don't get in the way of someone who is able to compete and who is able to contribute to this team right away. That's my only hope when it comes to Chip Cox. I always wish him the best. I think he's an outstanding individual on and off the field. I just don't want him to become a shell of his former self. I think we deserve better than that as fans and supporters, and I think Chip deserves to be remembered in a much better light than what we've seen in recent years.
Well, it's tough too. You're coming off of an injury which you thought that you were going to be, you know, completely done, and then he seems to still compete, but it's something we're going to have to find out. And if you think about it, Cliff, he's already behind the eight ball in this one because it's, you know, almost, we're more than a week into camp, you know, more than a week into camp. And it's, you know, I don't know how easy it is as a player who's been hurt in the off season and needs to come back to get back into the groove, that type of thing. So it's interesting. It really is. Maybe it's just, you know, maybe he needs to spend a couple weeks on the six game injured report or whatever it may be, or the practice squad to get back to what he thinks he needs to be at. But I'm sure we'll find out very, very shortly when it comes to, you know, by the time that the regular season kicks off, we'll know. I think we'll know either way whether Chip Cox will be back with the Alouettes in 2018 or take on something else. He'll take on something else.
Let's be honest too. Like we do have an absolutely solid foundation when it comes to linebacking. I mean, right away, Henock Mwamba, Chris Ackie, these are guys that are proven in this league. They're still young. They're still hungry. The rookies that have come in the linebacker position, like Paul Kozachuk and Jean-Gabriel Poulin, they too have shown out, and they've been extremely, extremely interesting to watch. So you're absolutely right when you say that Chip Cox is kind of behind the eight ball a little bit by not being at camp right off the bat. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, I'm not going to say throw Chip out because, again, for all the hard work he's done as an Alouette over the years, he definitely deserves to be treated like the star that he is. But at the same time, he still has to produce. And I just hope for his sake that he can get up to speed right quick. That's my hope, because otherwise, you got a lot of talented young players that are jonesing, that are just wanting a shot so bad. And I think we'll see that on Thursday. I think once that first preseason game comes, like, Chip will definitely not be playing. I'd be floored, quite frankly, if Chip Cox is playing in the first preseason game.
No, I don't see that happening.
So I'm curious to see who's going to step up and join this linebacking core, along with, like I said, the veterans like Mwamba and Ackie. Who amongst these youngsters are going to jump up and be a part of this team? Like, that's what I'm excited about more than whether or not Chip Cox is on the field at this moment. So, again, I still want Chip to prove me wrong, but I guess, again, time will tell, and we'll see what happens during this first preseason game.
Before we get to the interview with Steve Daniel, you mentioned it before, since you're talking about defense, I want to know what your thoughts are on the Khalil Carter situation, because you mentioned before, Rich Stubler is now our defensive coordinator. What's your take on the Khalil Carter situation, where he is, but now he isn't, but he's still a part of the Owls, but da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's just a, to me, it's just weird. But what's your opinion on that whole, is the DC, is not the DC, but is the scout, but is the, that type of thing?
It's definitely a weird situation. I mean, I was initially excited when Khalil Carter was announced as the defensive coordinator for the LOS. I thought, great, got a good young mind, guy who's been to two Grey Cups, the past two Grey Cups as a coach. This was ideally the perfect scenario for him to really establish himself as a true coaching prowess. I was really excited to see what he could do with his defense. I mean, after years of watching Noel Thorpe's defense, which has been fantastic, but Thorpe is no longer with the Alouettes, time for a new direction. Okay, fine. So let's put in a good young defensive mind that has CFL experience, because as I stated before, with Mike Sherman having zero CFL experience, it is crucial that his coordinators have that CFL experience, which Khalil Carter does.
Right.
So I was very excited with this move. And then to find out, okay, he goes through the offseason, he designs a new defensive playbook, he puts things in place, they get players that can work within that system. Even a couple of former Calgary Stampeders like Tommy Campbell and Joe Burnett coming in. It's like, okay, these are guys that have worked under Carter before and can sort of help translate what he's saying to the other players. I thought this is brilliant as far as I'm concerned. I was extremely excited. And then the news came out just before training camp that Carter was actually going to step aside as defensive coordinator and instead be a scout, because apparently his long-term goal is to eventually be a general manager in the Canadian Football League. I thought, well, that's very unusual. And now we also have reports that Carter was extremely difficult to work with and was potentially using his power over people, like just being very difficult to work with. So that came across as really surprising. I mean, a coach being demanding is not surprising whatsoever.
No, but somebody saying, hey, I'm your coach and you're going to do as I say.
That does, as far as I'm concerned, that doesn't pass the smell test. But again, we don't know what's going on behind closed doors. But the one message that kind of came across was that Carter put together this whole defensive scheme working with Rich Stubler. So it's not like Stubler has to come in and come up with a whole new playbook on the fly. Like he basically is entrenched in that playbook as well. So it's really just him taking Carter's, I guess, manifesto and sort of putting his own spin on it, but not without having to completely redo everything to make it a Rich Stubler defense. I mean, it's still very much a Khalil Carter defense from what I've been told. It's just that there's a different professor, so to speak, that's going to be teaching the students. Like the words in the language are still the same, so there's no misunderstandings of that. It's just, again, Rich Stubler definitely has the experience. He definitely has the Grey Cup championships. Like, the guy knows what to do with the defense. So it's not like a couple of years ago where an offensive coordinator was brought in and then fired during training camp. And then everything was thrown onto who was essentially the coaching intern in Ryan Dinwiddie. This is not that situation. At least Rich Stubler, as I said, has years of experience. I am a little concerned, though. He's not that young defensive mind that Khalil Carter is. But if you're working from that same mindset, though, if you're still working from that same playbook, and all it is just a matter of explaining the X's and O's, which Stubler can do without question, then I'm okay with it. It's unfortunate, because I would have loved to be able to say, like, the Alouettes are not that old team anymore with old coaches, but now you have a head coach and a defensive coordinator that are now in their 60s. So, I mean, I'm a little worried that the message may not get through to younger players, but I have to believe that the experience is going to trump any of these concerns. And again, you still got another couple of young fellas coaching wise, guys like Billy Parker, for example, like, that can help get that message across and still be able to relate to players.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't necessarily call it a setback. It was just kind of a shock to see how this all sort of played out with Carter. And again, he's still part of the team. He's still part of this organization now scouting. So I guess we'll see if this is going to work out or not. It's just unfortunate, though, just the way it kind of comes across, because now this is just yet another example, another bit of fodder for people to use about how the Alouettes are a hot mess, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking, too, because like, I heard this, like, oh, man, we're reverting back to 17 again. So it's like, you know, it's like, can something positive go out, you know, happen, please happen to this team? But you know what? For all we know, it's for the better, and we'll find out. We'll find out very shortly.
Yep. And so far, the camp sessions that we've been to, I definitely think that the energy is there. I think that I think Stubler is reaching these guys, and he is kind of getting that message across about what the Alouettes expect defensively this year. So I think so far it's working. Again, we won't know it for sure until at least Thursday when we see just how it all goes together. Because everybody looks great when you're pairing up against teammates, but when you're facing actual competition, that's where we'll see just how far these teachings go. So I'll be honest, I'm excited for the preseason game, if only for that reason, just to see just how well not only does the offense translate that we've seen from Kahari Jones, but just how good is Rich Stubler at reaching these particular youngsters, veterans on this defensive core, and how is it all going to play out? So how can you not be excited about that?
Oh, I know. We do have a lot more to talk about, but we wanted to make sure that that we get in our conversation with the head statistician of the CFL, Steve Daniel. So we will get to that interview, and then we will continue with the 50th episode of the Alouettes Flight Deck. Somebody who is a friend of the show, haven't spoken to him in quite a while, but we are always glad that he is able to join us, Mr. Steve Daniel, who is head statistician for the Canadian Football League. Welcome back, Steve.
Thank you, sir. It's been a really, really interesting off-season, and the off-season started kind of at the beginning of last year's Grey Cup and rethinking how we push information out to people that consume it. And it's been consuming me a lot, but in a really good way, because I think that's an area sort of fruitful for us to pursue.
For sure. Now, like I said, it's not a usual stats segment that we would usually be doing with Steve, but he has something that he's been working on the off season of what you happen to see when you're watching the games, especially on your computer, watching live stats, and also an endeavor that he has joined with a colleague where he wants to make sure that the correct information and stats and history get out to you, the fans. What does Joe Fan in particular do not know about that type of stuff?
I guess an analogy a little bit would be like the iceberg thing. For every piece of information that is made available to our fans in the off season, I've got about 9 more. You know, they're sort of 10% above the water that you see either online on CFL.ca. And so I take the data and break it apart even further so that if I do get a question like a guy in 1988 and how much he played and what were his stats, I can take them even farther by going back to all our original documentation, play-by-plays and things, and tell you a great deal more about his career. And we've had over 10,000 players. So more and more, I put that into what amounts to a static document. Okay. That's the CFL guide and record book.
Right, and if I'm not mistaken, I think the league tweeted out something today. If you haven't seen the link, and I can head over to, I think it's to the CFL Communications site over on Twitter, and you can get the link there. I know that's been recently released, and I know they talk, and all the stuff that's put out every year, every week too. So,
well, we're trying to make that available, Tim, and I think that. If you look at that link that you can go to, the first thing you'll see is the book is now 324 pages, whatever it is. But the point is, the kind of information that's in there is a great deal more in-depth. And if you go to that link, you'll start to see pieces of information that will not appear on CFL.ca because it's just so complex.
No, I can imagine. And Cliff, I tried to get you a page for yourself, but Steve said you didn't have any stats that he'd be able to put into the guide.
I got to up my game. That's all there is to it.
Well, it's just, you know what? I think if you let it consume yourself like it has me, you know, it's just, from a career point of view, I was thinking about gearing down a little bit, and yet it just keeps bringing me back this level of interest in each player. And I view each player in a kind of a different way than you might expect.
Right.
For me, they're, yeah, they're players and their numbers and everything like that. But I was telling somebody at a social gathering I was at last night that the favorite parts for me are when their relatives come back and ask how they did. And we're prepared, I think, to say, hey, your uncle did this or your grandfather did that. And I like that part too. That's starting to get into the social side and transition to that, as we right. talked about in the conversation.
Is there a goal? I know you and I have talked a few times, but is there a goal that you would want to have for the stats and record book to be available? Because I know it gets printed out every year, and you're talking about with the increase in size. Is there going to be a modification on how that's going to be made available to Joe Fan, or are you trying to keep everything status quo?
I like the idea of a book, because there's two camps out there that are forever badgering me in a good way, and that is, hey, we like the book. We always want there to be a book. But at the same time, it's like Kindle or something else. It's got to be consumable in a better way than that.
Right.
And I resisted Twitter for the longest time, and I don't really know why. Maybe it was because I didn't understand it very well. But I do know that we can make available in much more online ways. And certainly, Tim, and I'll say this to your audience, that you and I have kind of developed this relationship over the past year mm-hmm. or two, where you have skills I don't. And my secret, or not secret, my strategy is always to surround myself with people that are way better at me than the things that I might be good at. And we're all successful. You know, I can think of people who run the United States that don't feel that way. But the thing is, through efforts that you give us and me, we want to be able to create this avenue where in the middle of a game, as you mentioned earlier, something happens in the moment, and it's mm-hmm. only really relevant in that moment.
Right.
We can make that available in that way. Now, there's the topic started out as all these historical files I have underneath the guide. Yeah, they're there, and we'll publish those someday. But it's mountains of data.
Mm-hmm.
But you and I directly are interested, as we did at the Grey Cup.
Right.
Getting stuff out the door right then. And that's my goal this year, is to do that and to be able to do that way more.
Right. And that's how I was going to bring up, too, is that, you know, at the Grey Cup, you know, there were a couple of literally there were records right there and then that needed to be gotten out. And as I mentioned, Cliff, in a couple episodes ago and in person, it's you were basically jogging, both of us, real walking quickly, getting our exercise, going back and forth to each of the, you know, not only to the CFL guy, you know, the guys in the CFL who are running the Twitter accounts there, but also to the guys who are in the broadcast booths, because we wanted to get them the information so that if they choose to, they have the info and they could go ahead and get it out there. And I think this is where the idea for the Twitter account came from, because this way, not only can they log on and look at the information, but so can Joe Fan. If they want to tweet it, retweet it, talk about it, it'll be out there. It'll be sort of water cooler material that they could talk about at that moment.
Basically, it's context.
Yeah.
Historical context for what just happened. And for me, that's the future. And I know that the CFL has an abiding interest in doing this through them, and I'm quite willing to work with them and combine our efforts. What I've suggested is that it requires a certain level of knowledge and insight into the game, which, you know, somebody like you and Cliff offer through all the work you do through your podcast and things with the Alouettes and others, arena experience. Those things are valuable too. So for me, it's kind of a balance between that insight into the game.
Right.
And working with regular football operations and marketing and other CFL content people. And I'm kind of in the middle of it all. And we're working out how we're going to do this so that the fan benefits, not only that, but of course the Canadian Football League does it in the most professional way possible. Doesn't duplicate a lot of things, but keeps people involved like you that really make it work for me, because mm-hmm. then I don't have to spend so much time doing one thing or another. I'm right. spread thin beyond measure on game night because we don't have a lot of folks.
Yeah.
And yesterday's game was a good example. First game of the year is always a little rough, and yet we made it through.
Yeah. Preseason or not.
Preseason or not. To me, there's no such thing as a preseason game. I had somebody send me an email saying, well, that's what preseason's for. And my response to them was, no, it's not. The only time I ever get gruff in this job is when we don't meet the standards that I have for myself. And we didn't for a little bit, but it wasn't for lack of effort. And all the right people stepped up in our office and outside, and we made it happen. It's just frustrating it's not happening at the opening kickoff.
Right. Now, since February, sort of a soft launch, I guess we could say, but something, you know, the idea that you're talking about when it came to social media, because, you know, it'll be for in-game stuff, it'll be for historical stuff, as you said, just information that we can get out there. I think you also said that you were wanting to get out the best parts of the game notes on game day for the upcoming games, no matter if it's a, you know, single game, whether it be two games or, you know, as happening a couple of times this year, you'll have the dreaded triple headers. When it comes to that type of thing, I mean, is there anything that Joe Fan will not be getting on this account? Can you think of anything?
No, I think what we're going to try to do is get as much of this, the notes and trends out there, because that's the stuff that's the sort of creative insight, historical context stuff, which is 2 or 3 pages of really interesting things each game.
Right.
And as you mentioned, we need to get that out more widely than a narrow document of game notes that maybe 200 or 300 people might see.
Right.
I'd like to go that to go to thousands.
Oh yeah, for sure. And speaking of the account itself, I heard there was some back and forth when it came out to going to determining the current name of the Twitter account. You told me not at the moment. It won't be linked to Facebook in any way because you think that Twitter's and this type of social media seems to be the best way to get the information out to the masses. What you gave me the address, and correct me if I'm wrong. It is, if you go to Twitter, it's at CFL Stat Research. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And that was the initial avenue that you and I developed jointly and that has started to work quite well. We're exploring how to integrate that with other social media avenues and Twitter that the CFL itself uses officially. The good part is that all the right colleagues of mine, and I'll be in Toronto to discuss this with them on June the 7th, is that they really buy into the process. How we do that, exactly with which accounts, we're going to work out so that everyone's needs are met.
Right.
And I'm excited about that. But more than anything else, I'm excited about CFL Stat Research just as a thing that we do on a regular basis mm-hmm. as part of getting statistical information to the right people, to our fans.
Right.
And I'm excited as I can possibly be. It's renewed my energy for a couple of a couple more ways, and you know, I'm really thrilled about that.
For sure. So if you're on Twitter, which you have to be, if you're listening to us, you have to be. You got to be on Twitter. Head over to CFL Stat Research. If you have any happen to see any tweets or anything like that you happen to like, retweet them. Go ahead and favorite them. And as I said, it sounds like a very great, a very cool endeavor, and I hope it really works out well. Before we let you go, Steve, Cliff, is there any particular questions you wanted to ask Steve before we let him go?
I guess the one thing I'm kind of curious about myself, and I'm sure other fans are curious about too, is from a stats perspective, what are we looking forward to in 2018? I mean, we know we've got the season coming up in the next couple of weeks, and like you said, you guys have been working diligently behind the scenes to get things up to, like you said, an acceptable level, or your level of acceptance. What's one thing that you can tell us that should get your regular fans excited about the stats that you're going to be delivering to the Canadian Football League?
One of the areas that interests me most, and that I think interests our fans most, is we want to take our quarterback performance to a new level. And I don't mean this time producing like a core passer rating. What I mean is getting the data itself out there. And that is, when a guy throws a pass deeper than 20 yards, how does he do? He just led his team to a game-winning fourth-quarter drive.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those has he had? And Ricky Reyes had 40, I think, or 41. And that level of breakdown is what I'm interested in. We've done a lot in the last two or three years. And to be honest with you, the money that we have available in terms of making programming changes is directed at getting that information out more regularly in a better way. So that's always the challenge we have. Do we spend money on developing new types of analytics, or do we do a better job in reporting what we have and getting it onto CFL.ca and through Twitter with Tim? And that's where my attention's gone. But it's getting the actual data itself into people's hands, because CFL.ca requires development every year to make it better and better, as every part of our business does. So that's what I'm trying to do at my level, and make it immediate. And I'm looking for help at the game level so that I don't spend my time on every single play.
Right.
I can manage the process a little bit more. The benefit of that is that our fans get more information.
Cool.
But that's what's got me going. So I'm going to be in Montreal on June the 8th and looking forward to seeing you guys there and going to the game on the 9th and working with the crew.
Steve, as usual, greatly appreciated. We thank you for your time, and let's not make it too much longer before we have you back on the podcast again.
My pleasure, Tim and Cliff. Thank you very much.
Now, next on the agenda, thanks for Steve for joining us. It's been a while since we've talked to Steve. It's very interesting, Cliff, to see this new extension, his new Twitter extension, I guess we could say, of what the CFL stats department wants to be doing for 2018.
Oh, there's no question. And the fact that the league itself and TSN and pretty much a lot of the people that are sort of on board with that, like, I mean, stats are becoming more and more important every day, and we're seeing a lot more of it. And if you can present it in a user-friendly way that people just get excited about, I don't see any negative to that whatsoever. So I'm very excited to see where Steve's project's going to go on Twitter and just how that's going to work hand in hand with the league, with partners. Quite frankly, I mean, it's exciting. And I know, like, you and I were both stats geeks, so mm-hmm. I mean, we'll be a little bit more excited than maybe some of your more casual fans. But at the end of the day, it's still information that's being processed, and there's so much of it out there. And I'm very excited to see where this goes, and I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what's going to happen.
Yeah, I am too. Speaking of Twitter and social media, do not forget that we are on social media. There are multiple ways that you can contact Cliff and myself. The one of the most important ones that we mentioned at the top of the show is that you can now find all of the archived shows and current shows of Alouette Flight Deck at Cliff. What's that at web address again?
That is www.alouettesflightdeck.ca.
So not only head to our new URL, but you can also head over to our Twitter account. That's AlouettesFLDeck. And search for Alouettes Flight Deck on Facebook. The couple of things that we wanted to talk about. First, there were... And that's one thing I haven't talked to you about, Cliff. So I don't know what your thought is about this, is the rule changes that were released by the league. I don't know what your thought was on some of these, because some of them made sense. Some of them I wasn't 100% sure about, but, I think one of the ones that stands out the most is that now, for coaches, they are not unable to challenge for it's not PI anymore, but it is for I want to say illegal touching, but that's
that's wrong. That's so wrong.
That really is wrong. That really is wrong. It's not what I meant to say. It's not what I meant to say. It is what's the penalty again? Damn it! It's completely.
Legal contact.
Thank you. Thank you. Legal touching.
Although legal touching, I mean. Oh,
that won't sound very good on TV. They may have to give a. They have to may change the TV rating for the show.
Although I will say, just the idea of Andre Preux or Al Bradbury having to say illegal touching. Say it with a straight face. I don't think they could. I wouldn't be able to.
If Andre should just say it in French, then we won't know what he's talking about. Unless the game is on RDS, then everybody will know what he's talking about. But yeah, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones here that, because to me that's a huge issue. Because you know now that they are not going to be able to, you know, basically go fishing for this. You know, this basically it's a PI. I think out of that, I mean, that's one of the big game changes, I really think. I mean, it's some loopholes are changed when it came to I call them trick plays, but the sleeper plays where, you know, X player just can't come onto the field and stay on the sidelines to basically set up the play. Are any of the other ones that really, that they changed this year that really stood out that is basically a game changer?
I'd probably say the force out rule being eliminated mm-hmm. is definitely a big one.
Yes.
I mean, the fact you now have to place, if you're a receiver, you got to have 1 foot inbounds no matter what. Even if you got just straight up dummied. I mean, how many times have we seen that where someone's just been jumping up there, making an outstanding catch, but then just gets completely bodied by a defensive back or linebacker even. And now the fact you got to have at least 1 foot down no matter what, even if you are pummeled in the air, you still got to survive and come down with the ball and keep a foot in bounds. I think that's going to be interesting as well.
I think so too, because it's, you know, I think that rule was changed quite a few years ago in the NFL. God, I hope it doesn't lead to what the current debacle that's happening now with the catch rule. Oh, please, God, no. We've gone through that enough. I think one of the interesting plays, Cliff, is that the one about when the replay officials, they'll automatically be able to talk to review the quote unquote potential touchdowns. You know, like when players, you know, when plays are marked down, they're short of the line, when it appears obvious that a touchdown's been scored.
Mm-hmm. Where was that rule last year against Winnipeg?
Oh, dear God. A couple times last year for the Owls. Where was that play?
Right. But that mm-hmm. Andrew Harris scoring that mm-hmm. was just backbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I will go back and say, of course, that, you know, blowing a 12-point lead with a minute 40 left, that's kind of on your defense. But at the same time, I will go to my grave saying that Andrew Harris was down
at
the 1 yard line.
I will too.
And with any luck, with this new rule in place, that touchdown will be properly reviewed, God willing. And let's hope we won't see any more of these heartbreaking things. Because yeah, it's great when your team's the one that scores the touchdown. But you know, I just want good competitive football, and I don't mind losing. Believe it or not, I don't mind losing. If the other team is truly better than you, that's great. But when you have things like that just sort of hanging in the air a little bit, it kind of takes the joy out of it. So,
right.
With any luck, a rule like this will help the officials help themselves, really, when you think about it.
Well, I thought it was interesting, too. One of the plays that they changed this year was the what constitutes a quarterback making a legal pass behind the line of scrimmage. You know, because the way that it reads is like, was it in the rule book that it was where the ball went to? Because basically how they changed it is that it is now defined as the passer having at least one of his feet on or behind the line of scrimmage, instead of requiring that the release point of the ball be behind the line of scrimmage. I guess for instance, I was always under the determination that if the ball is if you start the pass from behind the line of scrimmage, you know what I'm saying? I always thought that it. I didn't think there was that much of an issue. I'm trying to remember last year if there really was an issue with that type of thing. Was there one play that they're really concentrating on that made this rule change possible? I don't remember, but
Nothing stands out to me immediately. And if folks on the Twitterverse want to chime in on that, by all means do so. Nothing like that, I think, affected anything quarterbacking-wise for Montreal. But, this may have just been a long time coming, and it's just now finally coming to fruition. But, yeah, I'm hard-pressed to think of any immediate examples. But Once again, if you folks out in Twitterverse have an immediate example, please feel free to tweet us at Alouettes Flight Deck, Alouettes FL Deck, and let us know, because I'm really curious about that now.
Yeah, pyramiding. By the way, they're talking about like how they modified the yardage for the penalty for pyramiding. Pyramiding, I think it happened a couple times last year.
Yes.
They just want to make it, you know, they just want to make it a little bit tougher. Because as we know, you're already kicking off where you are. You can put you back, you know, because obviously it'll be moved forward to the kickoff. I would think it should be. 10 yards is obviously more quote unquote severe than 5 yards is, but I do remember occurring last year. It's always interesting, Cliff, to see where these rule changes go. You know, because all the ones that are suggested at the beginning of the year, they talk about them, with the Rules Committee and the Board of Governors, and they come out with the changes, and it's like, you know, you never think of that type of thing. You know, low blocks, they talked about this. They talked about a blindside block. You know, it's interesting. It's interesting where all this comes from, sometimes there are ones where we just roll our eyes, but then I think there's a lot of them that really make us go, you're right. So
yeah.
The other thing that I thought was interesting this year, and we were humbled to be asked to be a part of this, was the first ever CFL media poll. And this is something that's going to be done twice a year, once right before the beginning of the year and right at the midway point. It was interesting. 20 some odd questions or whatnot. Yeah, 20 questions, 21 questions. 21 questions were asked of us, and some interesting answers anywhere from teams that win the West, the East, surprise player, et cetera, et cetera. And I know you and I were having an issue when it came to coming up with some of these answers. Of all the questions that we had to answer, Cliff, what was the one that you yourself had the hardest answering? I mean, because, you know, it's funny. We were asked, you know, the question was out there, who's going to win the Grey Cup? And somebody did put a vote for the Alouettes. We're curious to know who it was, because you basically were blamed as, you know, you were called out as being a homer. And I was like, you know, I responded on Twitter, and I'm like, no, that wasn't us. And to be transparent, Cliff and I, because we did this as a group, because we are the podcast, we picked the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
That's right. And interestingly enough, we did not pick them to win the West.
That's right.
But we definitely felt as the way things are shaping up right now, just based on what we've seen so far as offseason moves and all that goes, because that's really all we're doing is speculating.
Yeah.
But I honestly can, like, the way things are shaping up right now, just with Winnipeg's roster and the stars that they have, and everything just seems to be aligning perfectly for them. I can truly see a scenario where Edmonton wins the West, like, or finishes in first place in the West, but Winnipeg finishes second, home field advantage for the semifinal, wins that game versus whomever, goes to Edmonton, and honestly, could squeak out a win there too, and essentially go to the Grey Cup. And I think we believe that it would be the Argonauts that would end up representing the East, both in first place in the East, as well as going on to the Grey Cup. So a Winnipeg-Toronto Grey Cup doesn't seem so unbelievable.
No.
But Winnipeg finally ending their drought of 30-plus years of not winning the Grey Cup. I could see that happening this year, believe it or not.
And we also did say that there was going to be a crossover this year. I think that was probably one of the closest parts of the poll, was whether there's going to be a crossover or not. Out of all the questions that was... the results from all the questions that were posed, Cliff, what was the one that surprised you the most? Because I know for me, I think one of the ones that I kind of raised an eyebrow with, but I was actually quite surprised at where the Alouettes ended up, was the team that made the best overall moves this offseason. You know, Saskatchewan was tops at 28 votes between the 73 people that that answered this question. 14 votes, or 19%, were for the Alouettes. I don't know. I thought, to me, that was one of the most interesting questions. What was the one that really stood out to you?
I think for me, The one that was really interesting, yeah, it definitely was the which team made the best overall moves. But for me, the one that really stood out as far as like, wow, really, would be, I guess if you were starting a franchise today.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was a little. I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but very. I guess I was surprised in the sense that if you're going to start, who would you pick and why? And the winning recipient was Mike Riley, because yeah, he's definitely. I got nothing but love from Mike Riley as far as he's a warrior. He plays with intensity, and he's definitely the kind of quarterback you want to have on your team. So I can definitely see if you were to start your own franchise, you'd want a premier quarterback, and Mike Riley definitely is that. I still think, though, Bo Levi Mitchell is still, despite the fact that he has lost the past two Grey Cups and kind of now has a bit of that choker label on him, I still say as far as a quarterback goes, like that's still who you want as far as that. So I was a little surprised. I thought the fans would, or fans, the people that are participating in this media poll, I thought they would have seen it that way. You still would want someone proven, whereas someone that's proven and has been playing at a high level at that time. Now, again, Riley and Mitchell both are at that level, but Mike Riley definitely has a lot of kilometers on his body. So I think that's kind of what I was thinking about more than anything else. Bo Levi still very young, still, you know, has veteran experience, but still a lot younger than what, you know, versus Mike Riley and versus the abuse that he's taken. So I guess if there was one question that really stood out, I would have to say that one.
I think a lot of the ones here we talk about, you know, Zach Kolaris had a breakout season in 2018. People need to remember that this is a guy who hasn't lost his last 11 starts.
And also, ever since his injury, like he was just, I won't say struggling to find his form, but I'm still waiting for the real Zach Kolaris to stand up. And maybe he will. Maybe just going out to Saskatchewan, maybe this is what's going to breathe new life into him. I think that's what a lot of people are banking on, and it could very well happen. But yeah, I'm still with you on that one. As far as yeah, like you've got a lot to prove. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Steve Daniel of the Canadian Football League. I'm the head statistician and game info guy. Congratulations to the LS Flight Deck. That's 50 shows, and we at the CFL love it.
It's hard. We want to do a preview for the game. I mean, I'm happy to have the game on this week, you know, because with the limited preseason schedule that TSN is going to be broadcasting. But it's hard, really hard. You know, no game notes from the league. I mean, it's for us as fans. I think the thing that I'm going to be centering on the most, first and foremost, is because it hasn't been announced yet, who is going to be the starter for the Owls versus Ottawa. Because if you think about it, the Alouettes really, unlike other teams, the Alouettes could really play a lot of their first stringers because they're going to have their quarter, you know, what summarily could be our number one quarterback in there. I'm curious to know who's going to start. And as we've seen in past years, which I've complained about, where, you know, who was our number one quarterback got most of the reps through... whether it was, I think, either the first quarter or in the second game also, got, you know, a half. That's what really I'm looking forward to. I'm really curious to see who gets to start, how long they play, because, you know, honestly, Cliff, the only two names that we've heard is Drew Willey and Matt Schiltz.
Now, here's an interesting thought, mm-hmm. And again, without knowing exactly what the Alouettes are going to do or which direction they're going with as far as who all they're bringing to Ottawa.
Yeah.
What if, as it stands right now, just based on what we've seen in camp so far, it looks like the pecking order would be Drew Willey, Matthew Schiltz, Antonio Pipkin, and now Garrett Fugate.
Mm-hmm.
What if, for this first preseason game, what if Drew Willey, the only quarterback that has more than 1 year of experience, CFL experience,
right?
What if he doesn't play? And essentially they just say to the three, I'll say, younger quarterbacks, let them run this show.
What? I see where you're going, but my thought is that, to me, that makes it think of that they're putting Willie in the number one spot. When I think what I would hope for is that at least each quarterback would get a quarter. We don't know. We don't know what Coach Sherman's going to do. We have no clue what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, this is a guy who said he wanted to make a decision within 7 to 10 days who his number one, who his guy is going to be. We still need to see how these guys look. No matter which team they're playing against, you know, which Ottawa Red Blacks team they're playing against.
Mm-hmm.
We still need to see some positive things. And as you and I both know, there's a hell of a big difference between playing quarterback in camp and playing quarterback in a real game. I mean, the guys are still trying to get you, as we've seen in camp.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just a matter of going up against a different team that doesn't know the calls, doesn't know the cadences, doesn't et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. But by the way, speaking of quarterbacks and cadences, I mean, we didn't talk about this. I want to just point this out real quickly. You brought up something about one of our quarterbacks that had a hell of a cadence that was really drawing some of the defensive players off in camp.
Oh, yeah. Garrett Fugate. Mm-hmm. The way he barks out his call, he drew quite a few people offside, which was hilarious. I mean, again, it doesn't count in practice. And again, a lot of these guys are younger players too. They're just not used to it. But I found it particularly interesting that he was able to do that. That's a talent that a lot of people don't necessarily put a whole lot of stock into, but every once in a while, if you can just rattle someone, especially, and we'll probably see a lot of that too in Thursday's game.
Exactly, exactly. That's why I brought it up. Yeah, because it makes you wonder if he doesn't become the number one or number two, having a third, him being a number three and being able to do just that could be a plus for the Alouettes, especially on short yardage.
This is true. That's again, you got third and one. You got a guy, you think he's going to dive to that, but what if he just calls out his cadence in such a way that all it takes is just that one guy to flinch and boom, 5-yard penalty. And
yep.
It's just one of those nice little things that a lot of your typical fan may not necessarily think about, but it's one of those things that as someone who pays attention to the quarterback and how they approach the game and all that, it's one of those little niceties that they have that. Like I was smiling just watching him do it. Like, wow. Like, I mean, we don't know a whole lot about what Garrett Fugate can do other than like his college game film. I mean, he's definitely got a lot of potential. The ceiling is very high on him. Every draft report that I've seen of him tells me that this is a guy that with the right amount of seasoning can definitely make an impact and definitely be in the conversation as far as quarterbacking goes in the Canadian Football League. But this is one thing I didn't see it. And like I said, when I saw it, at live at camp, I'm like, wow, that's outstanding. It's like, that's, again, this is something that most people don't get excited about preseason football.
Right.
Again, these are just some of the little things that I look forward to and I can't help but get excited about.
It should be interesting. As I said, it's only preseason. There really isn't much to get mad about because I remember I was mad quite a bit last year. I think we all were. I think we just want to see progression. And just being able to see how well our quarterbacks do, because we know we have the talent on the wide receiving core, you know, it being quarterback and not having a true number one, it can be frustrating as we've seen over the past X amount of years. So it'll be interesting to see the game on Thursday, for sure.
Yeah, and again, CFL fans are just more than happy to bury the Alouettes for anything and everything, and I get it. I do. But for me, it's got to start somewhere. And as far as, you know, okay, this team doesn't have a quarterback. Fine. If that's what you truly believe, I get that. I can appreciate that, especially, too, with the, like you said, the malaise we've had over the years of trying to find our next quarterback. But it's got to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. And as far as I'm concerned, you take a look at Matt Schiltz. You take a look at Antonio Pipke. You take a look at Garrett Fugate. These are not known names yet, but there was a time when Mike Riley was the third string quarterback for the BC Lions. There was a time when Bo Levi Mitchell was a third string quarterback for the Calgary Stampeders, and you didn't know these guys from a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
And now look where they are. Sometimes it's just about that right opportunity that's got to come along, and it's on these guys too, these youngsters, to sort of take the reins a little bit. Like, you can't just say, okay, well, Drew Willey's the experienced guy, so I guess he's going to be the star. No, it's not about that. It's about, this is your chance to really shine. This is your chance to make a name for yourself and get people talking. If Matt Schiltz goes out there and throws three touchdowns and 300 yards passing in one half of football, people are going to be blown away. Like, who is this guy? If Antonio Pipkin comes out and makes outstanding throw after outstanding throw, people are going to sit up and take notice again. Garrett Fugate, if he can prove that he can take a team, if he gets playing time, it's going to be late in the game. If he can maintain a lead or lead a comeback or something like that, even if it is just a preseason game, this is the opportunity now for LOS fans to see just what our future holds. Could any one of these three guys be the next great quarterback for the LOS? It's possible.
Yep.
We're not going to know until they line up under center, but this is the time, and this is the opportunity that they've been waiting for. So as much as people want to, you know, bag on this team for how they've run things over the past couple of years, I get it. I do. But this is the chance now to see, okay, who's going to step up? Who's going to help shed that label for the LOS that they have? And who's going to make this team a better team? And to me, that's what preseason football is all about. It is talent evaluation 100%. We know what certain guys can do. And to a lesser extent, we know what Drew Willey can do. I want to see what these quarterbacks can do. I want to see what Kahari Jones comes up with as far as good offensive play schemes. I want to see what this defense can do. I want to see Rich Stubler get these, light a fire under these guys and get them going. I want to see special teams even do something. I mean, we've got a new special teams coordinator. And so far, everything I've seen has been working really well in camp. But again, that's camp. Camp doesn't matter until you get out on the field and do the thing.
Right.
And that's what I want to see. And that's why Thursday, it starts on Thursday, really, truly, when you think about it. Like, this is where this team is going to go for 2018. It starts on Thursday. And I just want to see that the work that they've put in this week, I want to see it come to fruition. I want to see it become something more than just guys tossing the ball around. I want to see an actual, honest football game. And I want it to, even though they say preseason games don't count, they count.
Oh, yeah.
Me. Ask anyone on the field. They'll tell you that this counts. And this may be their only chance to shine. So I want to see who's going to step up and shine for the Montreal Alouettes now.
Yep. Now we can say welcome to the preseason. The fun stuff's about to begin, and hopefully a good season for the Alouettes. But you know what? Let's be optimistic and look at these next 2 weeks with open eyes before we actually see what comes of the roster itself. And finally, Cliff and I want to thank all of you for joining us for these past 50 episodes of the Alouettes Flight Deck. If it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be here doing what we're doing. So we hope to see you for 50 plus more. So for everybody here at Alouettes Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach. Take off to the great white north. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. Take off to the great white north.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.